Homeward is committed to partnering with parents and equipping you with the resources you need to raise your kids to become responsible adults. And Steadfast Companies, a leading real estate investment company, is proud to partner with Homeward to bring you the following podcast presentation.
Tell me, what do you think of the marriage problem?
Your spouse, your mate, may be having an affair.
I'm here to protect my investment.
Oh, you're a hedge.
I'm Jim Burns. Well, during the next 24 hours, for every two couples who get married, one other couple will divorce. Well, that statistic is alarming, but there are answers and there's hope. Well, during the next half hour, we're going to talk about one of the keys to protecting a marriage, and that key involves hedges, of all things. Now, the U.S. Department of Agriculture describes hedges this way. Hedges are a unique and useful part of landscapes. Hedges can keep people or animals in or out, mark boundaries, act as windbreaks, and provide privacy. Well, that's the kind of protection our marriages need as well. And best-selling author Jerry Jenkins has actually written a book on how married couples can use the concept of hedges of protection in marriage to keep our marriages strong. I'll talk with him about that next here on Homeward.
From the studios at the Homeward Center for Youth and Family on the campus of Azusa Pacific University, welcome to Homeward with parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns. I'm Roger Marsh. APU's Department of Theater and Film and Television offers cinematic arts and theater arts programs. They produce 5 faculty-directed theater productions every year, a lot of other smaller student-directed productions. If you have a student in your world who is interested in the arts at all, especially theater, film, and television, you want to check this out at APU. And of course, you can learn more about the school when you go to homeward.com or apu.edu. And I mentioned that because our guest today on the program, Jerry Jenkins, is actively involved in the writing and the production and also the movie part of life as well, not specifically with APU, but he's also interested in preserving marriage. Our topic right now for today, loving your marriage enough to protect it. Here's Dr. Jim Burns.
Welcome to Homeward. I'm Jim Burns. Today, Jerry Jenkins, a name that you have probably seen on many, many books. Jerry Jenkins is a noted author, more than 150 works of both fiction and nonfiction, co-author of the Left Behind series, which is the best-selling Christian fiction series ever, over 62 million copies. Jerry, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Jim. Good to be with you.
Well, I have been looking forward to this because we're talking about loving your marriage enough to protect it, and you've got a great book called Hedges, Loving Your Marriage Enough to Protect It. Before we get into this, I understand that you spent 13 months helping Billy Graham prepare his autobiography. What was it like to be with Billy Graham?
It was the experience of a lifetime and privilege of a lifetime. I mean, he is the same behind closed doors as he is in public, truly humble. He really eschews the spotlight, and yet it's that very humility that attracts people to him. So you hear this cliche about when somebody comes in a room and it lights up. That's really true with him. Even now, in his elderly years, he's just a magnetic personality.
I understand that. I was at a conference once where he walked by, and I felt his presence.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was the presence of God. And it's because of his humility. Well, I appreciate that so much. You know, today, we're talking about hedges, and we're talking about protecting our marriage. And I want to throw something out at you. I have a person who you probably would know who is pretty well known in the Christian world. He was a real model to me. And he had an affair. Hmm. 2 weeks before the affair, he was speaking at a seminary, and the seminarians were asking him questions, and they said, you know, what are your vulnerabilities? And he said, I'll tell you one that is not my vulnerability, and that's that I would never be unfaithful to my beautiful wife who was sitting in the front row. 2 weeks later, he had an affair, which was then an affair that he stayed with for a while. The good news is he's come back, he's doing well. However, he somehow didn't protect his marriage. Hmm. What advice would you have given to him at that stage before he had his affair?
Well, and he probably knows this better than anybody now, but that's self-deception when you say, this is right. You know, not one of my problems. You know, obviously he needed hedges around his marriage, and the very first hedge that I talk about in the book, and not, my hedges won't always be everybody else's hedges. You plant hedges where you have weaknesses. So I plant a hedge around, you know, meeting or dining or traveling with a woman who's not related to me. I don't do that unless somebody else is there, or if it's a guy, that's fine. And you know, that would be something that I would recommend for anybody. In fact, some people call it the Billy Graham rule because he's had that policy since before I was born. It takes care of how things look, and thus it takes care of how things are, because, you know, you might have a crush on somebody at work, somebody you just like to see, and you like their smile and personality, like the way they talk. Maybe you've treated little you know, inside jokes and that type of thing. Some people have, you know, they develop a crush and they think, oh, I'm in trouble now. You know, my marriage is in trouble and I'm in love with somebody else. It's something that'll pass if you just don't feel it. So you need these hedges to protect yourself against being alone with that
person.
Right,
that seems so critical. Christianity Today International recently surveyed 1,000 Christians and found 23% had engaged in sexual intercourse with someone who was not their spouse. 28% had been involved in other forms of sexual activity outside of their marriage. 12% of the pastors surveyed confessed to an adulterous intercourse while in ministry. Does that surprise you?
It really did surprise me. And, you know, the fear of even putting those kind of statistics in the book is that, you know, men will say, well, wow, if even pastors are doing it, then, you know, what's the deal? The fact is, you know, people often will look for books on the will of God. They'll pray about the will of God. They want to have little study groups and decide, you know, how do I determine the will of God? I don't mean to be flippant, but when there's a verse in the Bible that begins, this is the will of God concerning you, comma, that's a clue. I mean, you don't need to pray about it or study it or look for it. And one of those verses is, the will of God concerning you is that you abstain from sexual immorality. We know what that means.
Right.
Don't have sex outside of marriage.
Right.
Don't have sex before marriage. So when I see statistics like that, it's alarming to me.
Yeah, it is alarming. And even that scripture, you know, I was thinking of the Greek word, not that I'm a Greek expert, but, you know, immorality, porneia, which is the root word for fornication. It could be the root word for pornography. It's the root word more than just sexual intercourse. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times what happens is people will say, well, I'm not having sexual intercourse, but they're really playing with fire because they're doing other things that are immoral.
And that's where the golden rule comes in. I mean, I hear people say, you know, I haven't actually slept with this person yet,
right.
You know. Well, what have you done and what are you thinking about? And
right.
When I think, you know, is this something I want my wife to be engaged in?
Right.
I mean, yeah, I might be grateful that it's not gone to technical adultery, but
right.
If it's right up to that point,
right.
That would not make me happy.
Sure.
I would consider that adultery.
Sure. No, exactly. In your book, you talk about the fact that very few of us protect our marriages from sexual temptation, at least proactively. And you give an illustration about David and Bathsheba. I mean, here was a man after God's own heart, and yet he slipped and fell and had an adulterous relationship with Bathsheba, had Bathsheba's husband murdered. Talk about that.
Well, needless to say, that's sort of the epitome of the issue. I mean, and after he did it, he wanted to get him killed to salve his own conscience,
right.
and to protect the
right.
The lie. So many things about that story could have been changed. There was a reason he was out walking and looking, and there's a reason, you know, sometimes we have to put the spotlight on her too. Was she not aware she was within the sight of the palace? And, you know, was there not some complicity there? I think the only encouraging thing about that story is that if a man after God's own heart can do that and repent and come back, there is hope for people who have fallen. But it certainly isn't justification or rationalization.
What is the driving force behind marital infidelity?
Well, I take the tack in Hedges that for too many men, it is very impersonal, and they're wired that way. It, in essence, you know, some people say, well, are you taking the blame off the man? No, I think that we have made that vow, and we need to protect ourselves and protect our marriages and the reputation of Christ and the reputation of the church. But everything in the media points toward the glamour of, you know, especially for men, there's the big ego. They feel a little attraction to somebody that's off limits. They may not plan to do anything, but they'd sure like to know if that attraction goes the other way. So can they just play around the edges enough to find out if there's interest? And then if there's, then what are they going to do? And if they haven't planted the hedge of not being alone, all of a sudden they could be on a slippery slope.
When you talk about hedges, and that's a phrase that we've used, and it's a phrase I've used for so long in a wonderful way, I've used that term in terms of this hedge of protection. How important is it to be able to share with someone else if you're going through these? And what you're saying in your book is people do have these kinds of feelings. Sometimes the first person that they are going to talk to is not their spouse.
Right.
Should they be involved in some kind of a small group where they have the kind of relationship where they could share that with somebody?
I think it's really helpful for guys to have accountability partners, even if it's not a small group, even if it's just one or two. I have a couple of friends that, you know, we're pretty frank with each other and ask how we're doing and are we, you know, maintaining the fidelity of our marriage and keeping away from things we need to keep away from. In fact, I have a friend that we've agreed that if either of us ever threatens the fidelity of our marriage, we're just going to come over and punch the other one in the face.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
That's a little bit of accountability.
Yeah.
But there's even accountability now built into the computer. You know, the internet is the new thing since I did this book the first time 15 years ago. And there are programs where it will email to your buddy, whoever
right.
you say, whatever website you visited. You know, you have to answer for that. And,
right.
and that's a hedge. I mean, I wouldn't want to be caught looking at that
sure.
website.
Now, the issue of marital infidelity impacted your life at an early age, didn't it? You've got a story about a pastor in a church.
Yeah, I grew up in a wonderful church, a small community church in Michigan, and people there often talked about, and very seriously, that this might be the best church ever. Hmm. And I thought it was. I mean, our pastor was young, and we revered him. He had a big family, and I thought, you know, in my youth and naivete, that he was really an ambassador of God and was sort of my picture of God. And when I got to be about 12 years old, there were all kinds of meetings and serious things happening, and the pastor was there half the time and not half the time, and should he preach or shouldn't he preach? And I remember asking my mother, I just bugged her to death, you know, what's going on? She said, you don't want to know, so just stop asking. Well, that's the wrong thing to ask a curious 12-year-old. So I bugged her and bugged her and bugged her, and she said, okay, what would you say if I told you that our pastor doesn't love his wife anymore? And I said, I wouldn't believe it. She said, see, isn't that what I just said? You wouldn't believe it anyway? And so, of course, then I was devastated because I realized she was telling the truth. And I didn't get all the details then, but he got enamored with somebody else in the church, another married woman, and broke up both marriages, split the church, lost her pastor. It has stuck with me my whole life. I mean, it's just, you know, who can you trust? If this guy could fall in that area, what, you know, who can't?
And in some ways, that becomes a benefit to you, Jerry, because
correct.
You say, wait, if my pastor, who was an incredible person, and I have no doubt that he was an incredible person, probably a man of authenticity, integrity at a time, if he didn't build hedges around his marriage, well, then he fell. The same thing could happen to you or me or anybody listening.
And I started looking at people that I looked up to and admired and respected, and my father was one. I try to think, now, what's the difference? And the difference is there are things he would not do. He didn't touch other women. He didn't embrace other women. He didn't flirt with other women. All these things that have become my hedges are things my dad wouldn't do, just sort of out of court. He didn't write books or have lists. There were just things that he had made a vow, and he was in love with his wife, and that's how he lived his life.
Well, we're going to talk more about this in just a moment. We're taking a break right now. We're talking with Jerry Jenkins. He is the author of Hedges, Loving Your Marriage Enough to Protect It. Very good stuff.
Great theme today here on the Homeward Broadcast as you're listening to part one of Dr. Jim Burns' two-part conversation with Jerry Jenkins. And you can tell by the ambiance that Jim and Jerry were on location at the Opryland Hotel in Nashville at an American Association of Christian Counselors convention not too long ago. And bringing this up again because of the fact that there are so many marriages that are struggling right now. They're just kind of fraying at the edges. And our mission here at Homeward is to help you, especially in your marriage, grow closer to you, God, and your spouse. Jerry Jenkins' book, Hedges, is now outstanding resource. Also, Jim and Kathy Burns' book, Closer, a very, very helpful resource. If you'd like ordering information about Closer from Jim Burns, you order a copy directly from homeward.com. A portion of the proceeds goes to supporting our ministry. We truly appreciate that financial support. Go to homeward.com for more information. You can also call 800-397-9725 and talk to Deb or Becca in the office here, and they'll be happy to give you that ordering information as well. All right, let's get back into it now. The conclusion of today's edition of the Homeward Broadcast. Here once again is Dr. Jim Burns.
Welcome back to Homeward. I'm Jim Burns. Today, Jerry Jenkins. We're talking about loving your marriage enough to protect it. He's written a great book called Hedges. Not only a great book, but also has a free DVD included and really worth you looking at. Today, I can't think of a more important subject for some people who are right at the edge. I mean, they're flirting with disaster. They haven't gone there, but they're flirting with disaster. Anybody who has been involved in an affair obviously knows that it blows apart marriages, blows apart relationships, it blows apart families, as Jerry talked about with his pastor, it blows apart churches. Jerry, what is the one attitude that you would ultimately say would spell disaster for a marriage?
I think it's the self-deception that you don't need hedges, that you've got this covered. One thing you're sure of is that you made your vow and you're going to live it out for the rest of your life. People can actually think it's easy because love will never fade, and we've made this vow.
Isn't it amazing because most people come to their wedding day and they're not even thinking about an affair. It's not even, but it just sort of slips in. Kind of give an illustration of how something goes from I will love you forever till death do us part to flirting with disaster.
I think it's fairly common that by the time people get married, they're still in the throes of the emotional love and the physical rush. And you want to get married because there's nobody else you'd like to spend time with. You know, the idea of being able to spend all day, every day with the same person that you have come to love is, you know, just makes you head over heels. And one of the problems, I think, in our Christian marriages is that people, you know, they put the vows in with all the other trappings and rituals. You've got the flowers and the candles and the train and the tuxedos and all this stuff, and then you use this you know, Elizabethan language or King James English, and you say, you know, vowing to keep you only unto myself for as long as we both shall live. And I realize this is too crass and wouldn't happen, but sometimes you just love to hear a pastor say, okay, rewind. Let me tell you what you just said. You will not sleep with anybody else for as long as you both shall live. Now, people would go, oh, no, that's not as pretty as keeping you only unto myself. But it's almost as if they just pass over that and forget it. You know, once the emotional love fades, and I found, my wife and I will be married 35 years in January. We've had a wonderful marriage. And we found that when the bubbly, you know, puppy love stuff was over, a deeper love set in, where you realize that love is not a state of being. It's not a feeling. Feelings come with it, and that's great. But the best kind of love is when love is an action verb. It's not something you're in, it's something you do. And so, you know, as I try to study Scripture and I read these convicting verses, and I mean, here I've been a Christian for coming up on 50 years, I'm still convicted by verses that say things like honoring others above yourself. Well, that begins in the home, you know. Do you really honor your spouse above yourself? When you go to the kitchen to get something to eat, do you give her the bigger piece or the warmer piece or the one you dropped on the floor? And I say, you know, if I'm going to love her, and the old bubbly feelings of, oh, I can't wait, my heart flutters, you know, actually it does. When we have been apart and she comes in the room, I'm like, that's my girl, you know. But it's not the way it was when you're teenagers or when you first met. And so you love by doing. You act out your love.
Kathy and I have been married 31 years, and it's a deeper love. It doesn't have the ooey-gooey feelings. But there are times when the feelings are actually, I think, more intense and stronger. Sure. Because we've worked through the commitment. We've worked through the issues. We still have issues. Yeah. We need to keep the commitment going. But don't you see that? I mean, it's not like, sometimes I'm afraid that when people hear this, they'll say, well, if you're married for a long time, it's all going to be about commitment. And it's not, there are some great feelings there.
They
I
really
feel
are.
Secure.
Yeah, exactly. And you've invested so much time, and you've had so many experiences together. It can be a fantastic thing. And, you know, if your personalities are such, that I think is the benefit for Diana and me, is that we don't like tension in the air. So if there's an issue, you know, I hear people tell stories of slammed doors and cold shoulders and silent treatment for 3 days and this and that. We don't do that, not because we're so great, but our personalities are such that we say, if it's clear we've offended the other one, we compete to see who can clear the air the first. You know, I want to say, did I do something? You know, and one thing we've talked about when we're in a good mode, we say, look, it doesn't pay to say, well, if you don't know, I'm not going to tell you. If you're that insensitive that right. You don't know what offended me, I'm sorry, I can't read your mind, but I really do want to know. And if you really love the other person and know them, you know, if they offended you, they didn't do it on purpose.
Right.
And they'd be horrified to hear what happened. So tell them and let it get it on, get it straight.
Right.
So let those things last maybe 10 minutes and be done with it. Get
exactly.
on with a good marriage.
And that's just good communication in many ways. When faced with a situation that really could lead to kind of an emotional or a sexual infidelity, what's a good first step to take?
Well, it's interesting that men are such that because of our egos, we want to win. You know, we got a problem with temptation or lust or whatever. We want to pray about it. We want to stand and fight. We want to turn over a new leaf. We're going to, you know, be strong, resolve. And here, what does Scripture say to us big macho men? Flee. Flee useful lust. Yeah, run. And when I discovered that, you know, and it wasn't hidden. I've heard it all my life. But it finally hit me. We're not even expected to pray about it.
Right.
If you find yourself in a position of temptation, you have the permission to run. And that's really the only thing that'll work. You're not going to stand there and pray and resolve, because the longer you stay there, the worse it is. And I think this fits your other question too. When you've had a long-term marriage and the warm fuzzies are deeper now, it is a better kind of love. But let's say you have an attraction to somebody at work or somebody, you know, turns your fancy. All of a sudden you get those lustful puppy love type teenage feelings, and you think, wow, this is what love was, and this is deeper than what, you know, this is more important. And if you really think about it, it's nothing. It's something that'll pass if you don't feel it, and that's why you need the hedge of not spending time alone with somebody.
Oh, it's very, very good. In your book, and you talk about hedges, and I want to talk about more of those next time, but you talk about the hedge of flirting. Talk about that.
Well, flirting is a fun thing to do, and it can give you a sexual rush, and I like to be funny. I like to engage in repartee, and the easiest form of humor is the double entendre, and a lot of people flirt in public because to prove that it doesn't really mean anything. You know, you have two couples out, and the husband of one and the wife of the other, they'll say, why don't you dump this guy and run off with me, haha, aren't we all funny? What if she's needy? What if behind closed doors they have a tough marriage, and she comes back sometime alone and says, did you ever mean anything you said that way? He likes that thrill. I saw this happen in our church, again, when I was a kid. Couples that socialized a lot together, and everybody knew that they teased that way. And then all of a sudden, both marriages are gone, a new marriage starts, and that never lasts, and it didn't. So now we got three broken marriages, and it's because of flirting. My rule is, you flirt with your wife, and I'll flirt with mine. I mean, flirting is great within the marriage. It's just, to me, it's just like sex. It's something you can do and have fun with, but it's not for anybody else.
We sometimes will say, well, this is safe. And maybe it was safe at step one, but it moves to step two, three, four, or five. So what I'll say to my accountability partners and also to my wife is, here's my line. I've drawn this line, and if I go over this line is nothing. But if I go over this line, then know that I'm moving into dangerous territory, because the dangerous territory is a few steps up there. Yeah. I think that's part of what I hear you saying.
Yeah, leave some leeway, room to run. Yeah. Right.
Exactly. What's a good hedge for a married couple to plant if they're just starting out using hedges as kind of the way to protect their marriage? What would you say is a good first shot, first conversation?
Well, I think the best first conversation is for the guy to be really frank and honest with a woman, because this book is written for men. I don't pretend to be able to think for women, know how they feel, but I'm getting a picture from the letters I get.
Right.
And usually women really have a lot to learn about a man's libido.
Right.
And he needs to say, look, it's not personal. I'm not really falling in love with other people. I do look, and I am attracted, and I am tempted to lust, and so I want to plant hedges to honor you. And the first time, sometimes the bride will go, my goodness, I've married a pervert. Why me? But she'll soon learn that this is very common, and the man who wants to fight it will plant hedges.
Very, very good. Well, listen, you've got to come back next time, because we've got to keep talking about this.
Love to.
And that concludes part one of Dr. Jim Burns' two-part conversation with Jerry Jenkins, author of the book Hedges. We're talking about loving your marriage enough to protect it. And of course, as you can tell from the ambiance there, that Jim and Jerry were on location. In this case, they were at the Opryland Hotel in Nashville at the American Association of Christian Counselors Convention. If you'd like to learn more about Jerry Jenkins' ministry, of course, you know the books that he's written. He's written several of them. They've sold millions of copies. He's a very, very popular author and speaker and writer. Go to homeward.com, hit the radio broadcast button. It'll take you right to the schedule section there, and then you'll have today's date. You can find Jerry's name. Hit the hotkey, takes you right into it. You'll find that information once again at homeward.com. That's HOMEWORD.com.
Loving your marriage enough to protect it. Well, that's been a great theme today here on Homeward, and my thanks again to Jerry Jenkins. He is also the best-selling author of the Left Behind series, just a great, great writer. Well, as we end our broadcast today, I want to leave you with a couple of hedge ideas that you can use to protect your own marriage. And the first one is find a marriage mentor or mentors. You've got to build relationships. I find that the people who have the most effective marriages build relationships with couples who are further along in the marriage process than you are. I find that people who are really having effective marriages are ones who often have these mentors. Find people who have already been there and done that and can give you perspective and advice and, frankly, some hope. And if you grant them permission, they can speak to your blind spots and let them know of any signs of danger that they may see in your marriage. Secondly, is develop marriage peers, not only just mentors, but peers. Build relationships with other couples who are in the same general stages of marriage as you. I mean, these are people who are in the trenches right along with you. They can provide neutral perspective to what you experience in your marriage from a peer's point of view. For example, Kathy and I were in a couples group some time ago where we all had the same age of kids and we're kind of going through the same things, and it really was a great experience. Just when we needed someone to lean on, then we could use one of them. They would then lean on us. We were going through the same things. I found it to be very, very invigorating for our marriage.
Well, it seems like those are the people you're going to be hanging around with the most. That's a very logical conclusion, and we appreciate, Jim, you sharing that as we conclude today's edition of the Homeward Broadcast with this reminder that Dr. Jim Burns' books, Creating an Intimate Marriage, and also Closer, the devotional book, both available in our Homeward Online Resource Center. We encourage you to check them out. Creating an Intimate Marriage actually comes with curriculum that goes along with it, so if you want to do this in a small group, if you are in a situation like Jim just described, where there's maybe three or four couples, your kids are all about the same age, why not start a small group Bible study discussion, Use Creating an Intimate Marriage by Jim Burns as the curriculum. And if you want more information about that, you can find it wherever Christian books are sold, but you can also go to homeward.com and order directly online. And when you do, a portion of the proceeds goes to supporting our ministry. We're completely listener-supported, nonprofit organization. We appreciate your prayers and faithful financial support. Check us out online at homeward.com. And now for Dr. Jim Burns, our engineer Ben Camp, and the rest of the staff, I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for listening. Join us again next time right here for another edition of Homeward. Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.